This is loud enough.
It's loud.
Perfect. Okay. Welcome all. I'm Dr. Lepidor, Executive Director of the Flowchart Foundation, where we open new possibilities by exploring poetry and the interrelationships of various art forms as guided by the legacy of John Ashbery. We're surrounded here by all sorts of Ashberiana. If you're in the area, please come on by. The show will be up through the end of August. Welcome, all folks. Come on in. Plenty of seats. Okay. Come on in. Welcome. We're here to celebrate specifically the publication of Phil Moneymark's newest book from Nightbook. And we have copies, by the way, over there. So afterward, avail yourself of one. And I think Donna could be convinced and maybe sign a couple of them if you're real nice. And Donna Moneymark will be joined by Ariana Lane. So yeah, I'll ask the two of you to come up and take your places while I a little bit, so we'll be ready for you.
Yeah.
Welcome, folks. Come on in. We're starting kind of on tonight because we are live streaming on WGXC Radio for Open Ears for the microphone out there in Radio Land. Donald D. Martin is the author of 5 books of poems, Good Stock, Strange Blood, which won a Kingsley Tufts Award for poetry. Life in a Box is a Pretty Life, which won a Lambda Literary Award for Lesbian Poetry. Discipline, a gathering of matter, a matter of gathering, and of course, just out instructions for the lovers, which we're going to hear from very soon. Her nonfiction has appeared all over the place, including N Plus One, The New Yorker, PopShares, Chicago Review, Best American Essays, 2018 and 2021. Art was also a 2020-2022 USA Artist Fellow, inaugural Toy Doric. Derricott, and chair in English at the University of Pittsburgh, and founding director of the Center for African American Poetry and Poetics. She is, of course, also currently a distinguished writer in residence at Bard College. And also with us, Ariana Reigns. And I have to say, I just laughed. Our listing for you online, I copied and pasted into this document, and your name is in bold, except the A of Ariana Reigns is not in bold. You have your own built-in petit objet con. Yeah, there were the colleagues in the audience. Yes, you're welcome. Thank you for that. Ariana is the author of the Poetry Collection's A Sand Book, which also won a Kingsley Tufts Prize, Mercury, Cœur de Lion, and The Cow, which won the Alberta Prize. Her Obie award-winning play Telephone was produced by the Foundry Theatre and has been translated into Norwegian, Turkish, and French. She translated, I'm going to say this one, Tikkun's preliminary materials for Affiliate of the Alberta, and Jean-Luc Henning's Little Black Book of Griselli di Real. Okay, both for a Senio text, and wrote, I didn't know I was going to be so on display with my pronunciation here, and wrote extensively for art form for its earliest incarnation. She's taught poetry and art as Mary Root Chair in Creative Writing at Scripps College, Holloway Lecturer at UC Berkeley as a visiting critic at Yale, and a community workshop at the Poetry Project and Poets House. In 2020, while she was a divinity student at Harvard, she also founded Invisible College, a lab for the study of poetry and the sacred. Wave of Blood, an auto-epistolary essay on poetry and talks, is forthcoming for Delighted Publishing this fall, and The Rose, our newest book of poems, will be out from Grey Wolf next April. Before I go any further, let me ask you to, as we celebrate Instructions for the Lovers, to please grab your lover by the hand, you know, your lover, and turn them off. My phone's not binary. I'm going to project your phone, so please turn that one on. And I'll just say a couple things just running through the two poets chat. Let me hear more from me. Instructions for the Lovers in our, come on in, folks, come on in. And that way, so people can find their seats. Come on in, plenty of seats. We are broadcasting live on WGRC. Okay. You may have assumed, seeing the flyer for this event, with the photos of Ariana and John, that the two of them are lovers. And in fact, in some ways, perhaps they are, because so are all of you, right? As we're going to hear about in just a minute, why not? We hope all of us are lovers. Take that any way you like. Okay, we're going to let people find their seats. We're going to give them a moment. Okay, I'm going to slowly move the microphone out of the way so we can hear from Ariana and John. Welcome, both of you.
So we'll do like a soft start as people are coming in. Does that sound good?
That sounds good.
Okay, great. It's great to be here in Hudson with you, Dawn. And maybe we could start before we really start by talking about how everyone thinks that we're lovers and also everyone thinks that we know each other really well. What do you think about that?
I mean, the thing that happened was that Jeffrey said, since you two know each other really well,
Hi.
Since you know each other really well, you can just like have a conversation. Yeah, but I was like, how well do we know each other?
Do we know each other?
And I was like, I don't know if we know if we love each other.
Me too, in fact.
But I don't know if we know each other that well.
But I love that you give me that opacity.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The unknowability.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
you're not transparent.
No. Yeah. Right? Yeah. And I feel that way about you, too. But we've known each other more than 10 years and maybe
more than 15 years,
actually.
Yeah.
Right?
I think the first time that I met Ariana, I didn't really meet you. You don't remember this, but it was a Halloween party.
Was it Eileen's?
Where?
Was it Eileen Miles' party?
I don't know. It was somewhere on the Lower East Side in New York. David Boop was there, who's another poet, a friend of ours, and you were in a body stocking.
But I have no memory of ever owning a body stocking, but I wanted to own.
Isn't it something you'd wear?
I mean, theoretically. I've always wanted one. But I love that you remember this, but I'm not sure that it happened.
It definitely happened. But
yeah,
we've known each other a very long time. We've read together many times.
I feel like you see me, and we've talked together, too, in different places. Mm-hmm. And yet, I do also have this feeling that I would not presume to know you well, which is really delightful. Mm-hmm. Okay, now that people are seated and we have that out of the way,
yeah,
the way this is going to go is we're going to chat a bit, mm-hmm. and then I'll read a little, and Dawn will read from Instructions for the Lovers, and then we will talk some more, and we'll be able to talk together.
Well, thank you. We'll take questions.
So as you are hearing things, you can be filing away the things that you want to ask someone.
Or Ariana.
Or me.
Both of us.
But mainly.
Feel free.
Yeah.
Be free.
Okay. So I adore this collection, I thought that we could start by just kind of situating us in this place, because in some ways, it's a pandemic book. Mm-hmm. Is that fair to say?
I would say part of it, yes. It's mostly, it began during the pandemic, right before, immediately after, and that kind of carries forth through the poems. Absolutely. Yeah.
And I knew you during this time. I was living here during that time. And I remember the thing that I loved, I don't know if I can say that I actually miss it, but the thing that I remember about 2021 especially, and this was true not only for me, but for everyone I knew, was like we were trying really hard at love. I remember that as a time that it felt like if we don't figure this out now, we're going to die. I don't know.
Well, right after lockdown, I was not writing anything. I was just kind of like sitting in my, I went to Pittsburgh, my partner and I went to Pittsburgh, and we decided to give up our Brooklyn rental and just spend the time in Pittsburgh. We just like escape New York, but some people do, we just abandon it. And it felt bad. And then Ariana was doing a really wonderful thing on Instagram where she was giving talks or reading through Rilke's elegies. And so one of the places that the poems actually begin is in that moment. In the moment of listening to you, you'd be like sitting on the floor with like a tank top, like, Brawless, I remember, sometimes, in front of like a large audience of listeners, and people were actually participating, and people were actually just listening and watching like me, and giving us this really deep instruction of one elegy a day. And what I was struck by, you know, is that how much I needed that, because Rilke is writing of an incredible, and you can speak more to this than I, but to and this incredible devastation, like between war and pandemic, right? And there we were in the midst of a kind of war, a war about to begin, like in this country, and also in the midst of pandemic, a race war about to begin in this country, and in the midst of pandemic. And so I would listen to you, and it was so invigorating that. Almost without my own consent, I started writing poems. I would write the poem, I would just like write in bed after I listened to you talk about each elegy. So I'm actually curious as to why you did that in that
moment. Oh, wow. I'm moved. I have no idea. First of all, at the time that it was happening, because then you had me come virtually to Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really exciting to share that with you. But I'm like a pharmaceutical reader. Like I only use what I need. And I just knew that I needed that then. And I'd had a class, a Rilke class that I had taught at Poets House called Rilking. Mm. And it's from a Kenneth Cope line where Kenneth says, Somebody says to Kenneth, I forgot how the poem goes, but they say, Kenneth, you're Rilking. And Rilking is like a pejorative in his poem. And I just sort of thought of Rilke as something that the New York School felt was like too precious. Like he's so serious about his emotions, mm-hmm. and he's so, and so I was teaching this kind of New York school approach to the Domino elegies that I felt like we could get that sincerity, but we could also play with it type mm-hmm. of thing, and I had done that IRL, you know, a mm-hmm. few years before the pandemic, and I just felt like this is a man who knew how to be alone. Like, he knew how to turn isolation into solitude rather than just loneliness.
Yeah.
And there's a gravity and a kind of alchemy in the poems that I just felt like I needed. And I didn't expect really many people to want to do that with me, but we all were so desperate. We were all so desperate then. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, I mean, I want us to feel like fluid about how this conversation goes, because I'm personally very eager to hear you read.
Yeah.
And what I love so much about this book is both how it feels like it has a thrust, like you feel propelled through it, like it's moving toward, like it's always moving toward love. Mm-hmm. It's always moving toward intense connection. And even the possibility, the fantasy, and maybe I'll ask you about this afterward, of creative or amorous collaboration. Mm-hmm. And I guess I wanted to ask you, you know, and I want to, like, frame this very, with a lot of room for opacity. Like, you can talk about, like, you, the person, like, you, the poet. You can... Yeah, the speaker of the poem. You can have the Venn diagram, you can draw it the way you want, and like, but don't feel like you have to answer from your personal life.
Sure.
But as long as I've known you, I've always felt that you were really good at loving. Mm-hmm. I've always had this impression of you. Mm-hmm. And I remember this like from back in the day. And I've always felt like I had no fucking idea how to love and how to and the book that I'll be reading from is also a pandemic book about love, but I always felt like Dawn really, there's like a lot of things that Dawn really understands about love.
What do I think about that? I don't know, I think that you know, love is my understanding of love and loving is an evolving scenario. And I think that, like, my ideas about it now, both, like, in practice and in theory, really, is that, like, it's also inextricably connected to a kind of grief or, you know, a kind of loss. Like already in its like formulation, and it's like being, you know, the love will end at some point, right? No matter what happens, right? It will end, and like so, you have to kind of press on inside of that knowledge, not you know, not the fantasy that it will never end because it will end. When you say forever until something happens, or one person dies, like whatever, right? And so I think that, like, one of the things I'm trying to grapple with in the book is the kind of, you know, both, you know, this is a non-monogamous collection. It's a collection that attends, however obliquely, to loving multiply. But in every case, you know, there's that deep, like, resonance of grief, even in the most ecstatic moments of the loving. Maybe the most ecstatic moments of the loving, because maybe they're most ecstatic because they are, in fact, infused with a kind of grief. And you can't get away from it, is what I think. So I don't know about good or bad. I think that, you know, we all fail sometimes in loving. But that's a part of it, you know?
I feel like there's the exciting thing about being a that is like the evidence and the proof of practice, like comes home to roost. And maybe if I were speaking less stridently, I would say, oh, this is a person who's made a practice out of loving, is what I thought, you know, the night we read it on Mabel 14 years ago or something. And whereas I had invested no conscious energy into studying it or taking it seriously, I felt like it was not something that was just supposed to happen. And that was also that once it happened, like, was supposed to ruin your life. Like, I associated love with the notion that it should destroy everything, which it can. And for me, as a late bloomer or something, like the last 3 or 4 years were like the first time that I actually took it as a matter of study or considered it as an area of care, like a realm of care, of caring. And it's weird because love and care are often put together, but a lot of people, they purport to care about love, but they don't actually. They trash it, or they trash themselves, or they trash each other. And part of the grief that charges all of your books, it's part of why you're such an important poet for me, but this is also part of our friendship. It's like, as long as I've known you, you've been taking care of your family. Mm-hmm. All of your family. Like the mother and brother is something that you and I share.
That's something that you and I share.
Yeah. But I feel like you're always taking care of your loved ones.
Yeah.
And that is not an automatic thing for people.
Mm-hmm. You have me think of the obliteration also happens within the practice of loving. It doesn't have to, if it destroys everything, the loving can still continue. It doesn't have to necessarily end. Right? Sometimes it does, and you're just like, well, yeah, well, that's over, and that was horrible, and that was just a crawl on the floor. But but sometimes the obliteration can happen, like, within.
Yeah.
I want to come back to, like, the ways in which, you know, like, our connection through caring for, like, our mom and moms and our brothers, but you have me thinking, actually, about this notion that is both in a sand book and also is both in your new book, The Rose, which I have digital galley, so you don't have access to this book. But about the relationship between love and humiliation. Is humiliation pleasurable?
I mean, maybe not for you, but... Yes, for me, I'm very excited by the edge of humiliation. Not everybody is. But
What about it?
I love the risk. Mm-hmm. You know, you're in Aries, I'm an Aries rising. Like, do you guys know, you guys might have seen this, like, there's like a nightclub that won't let Aries women in. Literally, like, it's like, you could look it up on your phones, like, it's like a thing. It's like, because we're disruptive and we don't want to be happy or something. We're just in it to make a mess. I don't mean to put that on you. But no, I don't like humiliation itself, but it's more the risk of it that's exciting. And this is just a thing with me, but like as I've gotten older, like it used to be when I was young, when I was like in my 20s, sex situations were focused on my humiliation, like that's what was exciting them. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not saying I was like, humiliate me, but people were like, I want you to, like, whatever. I want you to be like an Ethan Sheila painting, like, all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, you should just, like, ride on the floor as though you're dying. And people like that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. They like doing that sort of thing to young women. And as I got older, then for some reason, everyone that wanted to date me wanted me to humiliate them. Mm-hmm. And so for some reason, I'm magnetizing humiliatory opportunity. I don't know what it is. I can't explain it. I can't get to the bottom of it, but I do know that I like not knowing what's going to happen, and I like feeling like there's something at risk.
Yeah, because the poems in the rose kind of begin with these descriptions, these new canopy, kind of like renderings, I guess, of that multiple, like, one's own humiliation and then the humiliation of another and some kind of dialectic loop therein. And then in Instructions for the Lovers, there is this notion of service, which is, a kind of approximation or approaching some kind of maybe humiliation, but it is really like one on one's knees in the service of loving.
I mean, it's so erotic the way service is rendered in your book, and it feels devotional, and it feels connected, like a cousin. In my case, I'm just gonna like come out and say, like, to the extent that I've been interested in my own humiliation in my personal life, not to speak of literary like renditions of it, it's because I lived with terrible survivor skills about my mother's mental illness and her homelessness, and even though the entire family abandoned her and my brother and me, I felt personally responsible for her suffering, and I wanted to be punished so that I could stop feeling so bad about it. And so did that affect my sex life? Like, yeah, because where do you work that stuff out? You can't pay a shrink to work that out for you. Like, when you feel guilty for something, whether it's your fault or not, you're going to work that out in private, right?
Yeah.
And, my humiliation may be your service, or my punishment may be your service. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that they're parallel, but they're in some kind of kinship. Mm-hmm. And there's a way in which, I've been thinking a lot about your essay. I'm going to fuck up the title now.
When a person emotional.
So when a person goes missing, which is an incredibly moving piece of writing. And it's at N+1, and if you all haven't read it, immediately after this reading, you can go and read it. It's a gorgeous, overwhelming piece of writing. And for me, it's like it grounds my understanding of how you love, how you serve, and how you care in a way that's, none of this stuff is reducible. Like, we can say where we feel it all comes from, but in some way, it's all irreducible.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right, because in the beginning of the essay, what I'm really, like, grappling with is, like, my younger self, where, my brother some troubles, but like the way that my family actually held me was as if I were like, the shining star of the family, the only person who would make it out of whatever the situation was for my family. And my brother was really denigrated, and it has to do with his like position in the world now, his social position, his economic condition, his mental condition. But when I was younger, I was just like, I didn't have that feeling. I didn't have any like feelings of like survivor's guilt or anything like that. It wasn't until much later as an adult when I come back home, when I'm kind of forced to come back home because of the condition of my mother, who was old and frail, and my brother was incapable of her, or unwilling to vote, that I was kind of like yoked back into the family in this other role, where I start to grapple with, like out loud in an essay, what it means to be exceptionalized in a Black family, who is, working class or lower middle class or poor, depending on, the context of which you. Right, like it depends on what context they're in, what the economic condition is. And so then I'm just like, oh, okay, but what is my responsibility, and what does it mean to have this responsibility, and what does this kind of loving look like now? And always still having that child self come in and be like, don't you just want to leave? You know?
Yeah. That's so beautiful. You know, this last thing I'll say, and I don't know how much time we're taking, and I'm sure you all have...
time.
Oh, we are out of time. Oh, we're good. Okay, we're good.
Last thought, though, I would say.
Yeah, no, I didn't plan to be thinking about this, but Cain and Abel, the story of Cain and Abel, has like influenced. I stupidly wrote two books at the same time, which has made the last year of my life very crazy. And I just finished both of them. And it turns out that the story of Cain and Abel has been very important to both of these. And it's like, it's these siblings, and one is favored by God, and the other one isn't. And one is, you know, in the light, so to speak, and one is cast into the shadow. And that's the story of the first murder, according to, you know, whatever that version of everything that ever happened on Earth. And I found myself very taken with this story, and I think that's part of what I just find. I'm like immensely moved by sibling lovingness as somehow showing us how we love in the world in all ways, like not only erotic love or romantic love, but there's something like I see you as the shining one who got to get out, but I also see you filled with this sense of responsibility and care that keeps you going back and back and back.
It's like they get blurred.
Exactly. Sorry that you have to hear from me first, because I cannot wait to hear Dawn. So, okay, for this part, I stand up. Can you hear me from this microphone? Okay, good. Cool, now I get to be nervous in a new way. So I'm just going to read a tiny bit from this book, The Rose, which I started writing here in Hudson. And I won't say too much about it. I'll just read. That will be that for now. This feels a little low. Garden, God, Eden, prison. Prison, Eden, garden, God. Because I'm already being spied on, I've decided to spy on myself using poetry, the only knife I've ever used to cut my life. I feel like a bag of pork, a bag of trade, a meat knuckle, cold, a leg. I want to be hurt for my swollen heart. Humiliated, or rather, I expect this, dread or wanted. I can't tell the difference. I have elided the difference on purpose. I want to be hurt, and I organize this feeling because the age in which I live compels me to respect myself. It is my duty to do so, and even though our contemporary idea of liberation would allow me to display my own abasement in empowering terms, should I ever seek to display it, I am talking about something deep inside me, not about the theory of how to show it. My longing, true and unliberated, carceral and unlimited, is a desire I do not slake. This desire has therefore become religious, has become so by sheer force. By my refusal, almost identical to devotion, to violate with any approximation my hunger. Death has the biggest dick of all. probably the reason women are still attracted to the devil and will always be is that's who fucked us originally to get life onto this planet. Mild chuckle. I don't take that very seriously. These are facts. After coming, he says, when he comes with me, it starts before it has started and goes on long after it finishes. Sometimes after we fuck, he gets delirious and says childlike phrases that almost rhyme and approach poetic sense. His head seems to pivot on its axis, and twitching, he loses consciousness. I can feel him hesitating to finish a compliment I want to receive in words, an energy I want to force him to force through language. You are going to give me this compliment directly, I say, and I steady myself to receive his words, distinguishing me from every other woman he has ever known. Dumb thing. Poets make people put stuff in words in a really dumb way. I mean, hopefully not you, but I. Words as love, words of love, when they're showered on me, I always treat as lies. Lies that nevertheless powerfully control my body. Like advertising, you spend all your life trying to ignore. But it must work, or else why would they pay for it? Last night, I told him I couldn't tell if he was a combination of highly intelligent and slightly retarded, or if he was simply kind of dumb, but that I had decided it was the former, since that way of seeing him gave me intense pleasure, a sexual genius with a concupiscent void floating like a cloud of idiocy at the center of an otherwise powerful mind. Stupidity, though, is a sloppy word. Devotion comes closer. Hell no. I lost my mother on the surface of the earth. I lost her in public. Never agreed to what we've been doing with nature, of which I am a part. After pulling flowers, I had nightmares. Rustic trowels and spades and radial formation, each displaying a single human organ as if dug up, as if an offering. I crushed my need for self-expression all the time, even though it's my profession. Do human bodies come from underground as the ancients snakes did? I compress my thoughts, the bodies of serpents under the amorous bulk of a mountain. If you fail to build in yourself a secret room, the culture will simply conduct its cargo and traffic up and down you. You'll begin to feel like an airport, conducting their cargo efficiently from mouth to gate, host body. Interrogation devolves into x-ray. I see through everything passing by way of me, mouth of the city, lip of the country, making improvements on the danger in me, revising the charter I drafted to kill with. I got so angry I could no longer eat. My charter governed only me, grenades and pomegranates growing underground. There's a secret culture underground whose womb foments visions of substance. Here lie also the black hole and the solar neutrino, the secret and terrible shovelings of love, loading my chasm with myth and gunpowder, tamping it all down with a stick. When you're a revolutionary soldier with only one bullet, what else can you do? In this economy, myth costs less than a bullet. Hardly anyone understands it anymore, which is why you can't even sell it. They ruined the internet. For weeks we were looking for Wild at Heart, finally accepting on what felt like our final night together. It had been scrubbed from the ethers. If you didn't already know it, how would you know to seek it?
or the reality of fire, as even recent artists have known it. Ours was a love our phones made possible and took it away, buying and selling our worst nightmare to one another with speedy intimacy, sheer drop to the depths, fabricating mutual dreams at the edges of our mouth, where grandparents who lose their native language hide their dreams like a stone phallus manufactured for the hand of a devotee, communicating cult drugs to the core of me, where business also is transacted, where vision too is business, and so is love, like ours. I seated myself in silence, votary offering to all of shrieking time. I found a quiet place for my heart to harden as it filled up with blood. I lost my mother. I rejected love. You belong to earth, spoke something inside me. The actual smell of fish, the powerful that have me forget my body. The place of terror is a place of arousal where I would not build our house. Red tide, river of burning shit, convection of an empty feeling. Daniela described to me the reverse tectonics on the seafloor, pulling souls down to the earth's core. She saw in a vision. Souls so furious, this was their only way back to the maternal embrace. We both cried when she said it. You can't read things like this in a book or say them in public. The cool room at the center of my house. Monster attracting me like no man. I am so angry. I've gotten so angry. The little room in the middle of me, where I see what I can't say. I have to stay moving, evade the imperial calendar, my father's beard whitening and the blackening sockets of his eyes. I live in time, chasm of stars, discipline of magnetism and the navel of the labyrinth, horned monster, potions of the eye, attributes I share with the spider, light my way. It's better not to speak of such things. The girl in the story often doesn't want a man, but they don't teach you that, do they? She wants a devil, an animal, to escape the raping god, to be a tree. The girl who pulled flowers to be sucked under. The girl who led the hero through the core of his ordeal. All heroes grow ashamed of the assistance they depend on. All sorceresses who once gave so freely of their wisdom will live to meet the day at last, because no witch dies. She finally wants her magic for herself. When Vesuvius erupted, no authority could divide punishment from climax. Blood's hot career behind white-blue marble death conceals a riot of misspent emotion. Harassment of silence, tissue of horrors, explosions on the surface of the sun. Last night the sky was electric. I would not let my lover get near me, even though I yearned for him. Coronal mass ejection, contradiction. How else could I open my mouth? But you can write without speaking, but do it too much, you'll lose your womanhood. When I turned 5, my mother hired a pony. I was so overwhelmed by surprise at the sight of it that I refused to ride it. Everybody rode that animal but me. I watched them all go up and down our yard. Surprise led to a force of will I still don't understand. The larger the lust, the more erotic its refusal. What is no? Not the withdrawal of consent at its secret esoteric best. No meant I want a force of nature, nothing less. My grandmother's words press against my navel when I'm sleeping. Give me a child, she says. Tell your baby my story. But the red priapic face of life offends me with its cheer and sanity. All you have to do is say yes. Life smiles like a lurid frankness. I would grow to a great size and piss on this world till it drowns, but I'm forced to govern my territory with absolute rationality. And so I do, and so I shall, till nature itself overwhelms me. What I repress contributes to the force of what I show. Lust is dignified by ash for eternity. Revenge of the living planet, indissoluble from generosity, the only feminine law.
gosh. That was amazing. That was amazing. Thank you so much. Okay. Because I have no idea what poem. I have to time myself because I have no idea what I'm going to do here. I don't want to just go on and on and on. So, thank you, Jeffrey. Thank you to the Flowchart Foundation for hosting this event. Thank you, Stephen and Motika and Nightboat for publishing this book. And thanks to Ariana. I wanted to do this event. Like, it was just like a no-brainer when Jeffrey was like, "Who would you want to do a competition?" And I was like, "Ariana Rhines for sure." And it's because like you are one of the poets on Earth who I admire the most. So thank you for that beautiful reading. Thank you for all your work. Thank you for your courage. Thank you for your courage in the way that you speak out on Gaza, on Instagram, which sometimes you have to take down. And I'm like, where'd that post go? These are the posts that I share with my students when I'm teaching my, when I was teaching my writing poetry's our resistance class and what it means to have courage. So I appreciate you so much. Now I'm going to read some poems. Instructions for the library. So there are, it has, I will say, multiple different kinds of utterances. Some are poems that are titled and they, you know, look and have the texture and feel of poems, I guess. Some are untitled, some just moments of untitled utterance. And some, there are moments, there are these moments in quotations, which, I don't know, some are kind of poems that come from conversation. So what I'll do for you, so you know what's what sometimes, is try to indicate the poems that are titled, which is to read the title twice. And the other stuff I'll just read. I'm not going to have anything to say about it, I don't think, in between, unless I feel so compelled. And I'm going to start from the section titled Service. There's an epigraph from Toni Morrison's Beloved. But if her shining were not for him, then who? As if the tender body is, as if the will is tender, and like any creature that has its hood up, you take a photo of yourself in front of the window, rain so dark, the day and vision desired, the way you are so desperate for beautiful adventure, the lights shut off and the sweat of some hot stranger in your mouth. As if to say before is to enter a house filled with teenagers piled on top of one. Did I tell you that it's raining? It's not hard to think that it's already night and necessary, how any green is a wild form. And lastly, I don't want to inspire devotion if it means the I becomes separated from the world. Service as in soul, as in undying from the old French, act of homage, servitude, service at the table, from the Latin slavery, condition of being a slave, this blessing on me is an opportunity of grunt gratitude. Thank you for this labor in my infinite waiting. Attentive in service, she said, to gathering of, to fully, to steady the body uninterrupted. Speaking of facts, here's a fact. Family photo, colon, the unquenchable, comma, the cunt's expansive well, period. Facts. Perspective is supposed to yield clarity. Perspective is supposed to yield clarity. To waste years half alive, gumbled up in one's own lazy wallowing is how the tonic lay across me like a monster blanket. I watched a lot of porn, I drank a lot of whiskey, I let my body just wander around as if it had no mind, just body and buzzing, the way vibration can make you hover above yourself and the feeling is exalted and you don't ask any questions at all about what life means. A bit of animal is a secret to the unasked question, an openness to squander what will cease to exist anyway, and yet what quarantines do not produce a desert of wifely longing? What kind of current, what kind of system, what kind of birthright, what kind of system, what kind of wealth, what kind of birthright or digging or commonwealth insistent on its own bright realm? Territories of defeat. And yet, the garden swathed in bronze sunlight, a bruise is a figure of remembrance. Its blue arrows hums. This is a quote. It goes across two pages. It was said that their relation made a generative horizon line for all who are willing to look. The coming thing. The coming thing. She said, I wish I prayed I would pray for you. And we all wanted a shape of prayer in our brains taking over instead of it chomping on itself, stupid little elf. God has never come to me. We surrender in the teeming utterance of materials soaked with sentences already made in air and by machines. The country says freedom, crushed under its own dream weight. I did not make up this song. Design within reach is having a work from home sale. The coming apart, the giant laceration across the sky we all fear. Look at the fire. Look at it. Like all the rage of all the smallest beings. No language suffices the lover. No language suffices the lover. Relief in not being stranded in a pew, catching another human's skin fragrance, little invisible particles of otherness entering the nose stream, their particular grief of living. All around us decay, you can smell it, the white mills, white air between us. Pretend we exist. Try language. Try excessive sweetness. No names for things. No names for phenomena. Wound gathers around borders. How long can we live without a body? Once the body, once its spiked desire. Future photo, colon, as we transform this body, horny contentedness. I see your book. Ariana has some pages turned over. I'm going to read those. And to exist is and to exist is what it has always been. A woman lounging on a velvet chaise or a woman doing someone else's laundry figuration, a boy with a bag, etc. America cannot distinguish certain urgencies from faith. Drones overhead dumping something into someone's. How to enter belief, a quest, a dissonant reaction. I have said everyone, but I meant a few. I have said chaos, but I meant catastrophe. The whole nature of loving another person. I have said everything, but really the poem is meant to register the particulars. These pants from anthropology. anthropology, like black balloons. There's a black man on my street walking with a bat and safety goggles, his little white poodle trailing behind him wearing a sweater, the first touch in a dark bar hallway, just the right pressure of voluptuous sinking narrative right out the window, if there could be a narrative. When want becomes need, desert husk. The service. What's that called? I just said that. The lover in service to, / in service to the lover, quote, an expectation is repressed want. Repression makes a hardening of feeling. A list of what one seeks in love. A confusion between clarity of want and fixing a narrative. Instructions for the Lovers is in the center of the book. I'll read a little of that. Few more poems. I think this is funny, but nobody else thinks it's funny. This part, I mean, I think the autobiographical parts are funny. The whole thing is autobiography. Instruction, it's all hilarious. Instructions for the Lovers. The lover was here and then not. This is always the case. The lover persists in loverness and then poof, not poof, poof, but out of the kitchen and casual nakedness. The lover is a long tail, though, whipping around, not understanding the sublime beauty of respite. I used to fuck almost anybody out of starvation, hunger that splits the one into many and leaves you arching toward a stinky mattress on a floor. It could be. I could have been. Times when the world dissolved into waves. Who knows that kind of blurry nothingness? Nothing is due. The more my father died, the more mattresses, floors, and car interiors, dirt, dark air, hallways, undestinations, railway car junkies smelling of eau sauvage. Lover is incorrect to describe the lover. No English word for the labors of. Opening, red fabric, legs wanting to be that. There is want, and then there are stones. I was a stone once myself, a smooth black blind projection. I create you in the image of my desire, which makes you nothing. I forget my own desire, which has a factor, a record of convolution. Remember, I became consumed in waiting, and then there's nothing else. All time is nothing. The days just pass, and I'm in anguish. Anguish is a red hurt, the salt, the time of expanded presence. What if we're all lovers? What if we're all little books, little consequences? The entanglement of loverness meant that when the world disappeared, we could not feel our subjugation cradled by the beloved, enveloped, however temporarily, in the confines of bloom, the consumption of the ego. We swagger forth into our gendered selves alongside American rivers, my cap tilted sideways, resolution stands like a remnant, call forth the tatters of any lover correspondence and dip into its performance. I'm not dying anymore, you whisper into the lover's ears. In the henceforth, what remains is tumbleweed lining the throat. It swells, heartbeat in ears, disintegrates all knowledge. Dear lover, you know I lie. I want a life of deep connection, I said to the lover. These things, why say them? I do not quote, have this lover anymore, possessed as I am by connection and loving. Want to have, want to tuck under my smelly armpit, want then to release into the world like a wounded bat I healed. I thought that lovers were a resemblance for my use, speaking of service. The day is long. Beautiful use is a lover who waits naked for hours, self-bound. She called me fragile and then superhero. All of it. All of it. Turning three times by its nature, unprecipitous, a bar where I did not long, the stripped dearth of the material world, naked, elemental, fire, a cathedral where I did not belong, foreign lewdness as if my cunt was drag on its marble floors. To locate oneself in place can be a horrible thing, depending on the place and the self. In this case, a straddling between worlds, and I am my own therapist, I said out loud, drunk with emotion, I built with intention on a front porch, my body slathered in venom, a wild weed. Okay. This poem is impossible to read because it's like a conversation, but I'm going to try to read it because you haven't marked. Let me, I like to be mad. You know what I mean? Like the glasses are sliding down. Okay. Oh, about art. D plus D. We must make language of all forms of art together. What art produces is a different language, untranslatable. But then, why want to ask questions when looking at art? Language happens to be how we know ourselves to exist, or how we know we are unknowable. I'm not sure art produces. Is it lonely then, art? It's both lonely and a calling into the possibilities of shared. Art can't ever be done. Then it must produce. It makes babies. Between the person, persons, and the art I'm saying is something other made possible by that interaction between persons and art. For so many reasons, I wish I could have seen these works with you. Yes, to me, art is relationships. I think we're saying something different this time. Tell me. Another way toward this is that art casts a spell, not on no one. Material or substance is produced inside of the interaction, the engagement makes, even if it is one soul staring upon and feeling. Suddenly, the art work is not lonely, it's a mother. And when the artist is making, I rarely think about that. I know, the artist. But is the artwork lonely here? No. Because it is uneasy in becoming. Maybe this unease approximates pain. That's just like a good way to think about the problems of looking at art right here. Even though, you know, what does it mean? Self-care, and then I will read a poem called Insistence on Being. Self-care. This is when, okay, we'll say something. So these titles actually are sometimes kind of boring because I thought I would write a book of poems where there were like titles, because a lot of my books don't have like title poems, and I thought I would write a book of poems with like titles that sound like anyone can have this title for a poem. Self-care, anyone can be like, self-care, it's a poem about self-care. I don't have it to poem about self-care, but let's see. We annihilated by rigor, wet close to edges of ornate buildings meant to keep us safe. They said safety was a priority, no reason for coercion, grammar's meaning undisputed, or so they said in black and white. It's right here, it says right here, tigers for populace, take it or leave it, and holy water dripped from tongues unable to absorb anything anymore. Meanwhile, outside the gates, obsessive chatter about freedom, which they said was doing whatever you want, whenever you want, with whom or what, and unintended or purposeful, land or sea or flying, the tower's upper window, empty, irresistible war, ticked a lever in the chest for flying. What are the parts you don't remember? Which evidence points toward exosphere? So we lifted our one half broken wing and we flew. We unswatted, recalled the medicinal qualities of the buzz whale tree. Insistence on being. Precarity as a form of divination. Looking into each light form and breaking as old as the human body, its devastating fragility. Only the mother knew the sporadic neck bone calling it a fat mole. The gumption of that slang revealed itself in a melancholic gaze. Comfort and ease of hospital-bound paper clothing I did not touch. I wondered about proximity as potential touch, my own fixation on narrowing the gendered body. I wanted the skin just right above the skeletal frame. You can call it free movement in concert with conquest, the old ways. We belabored our gentle being, tongue, ancient parasite stroking its own floor. You can't stop yourself. You could never stop anything, all beginning and motor, all stiffening and coming. How does one not become with finality? She said, maybe I'm a concrete subject. Final brush. We rub hormones on our chest and hope for the best, as if Lord is enough of a prayer. If only fuchsia like the weather. Having never lost, as the father was ruined down from, he emerged after an unearthen form like himself, unrealized. What is the self if not a tether? What are the bounds of flesh and bone, sinews that take no rest, called teeth wretch, where things were once hockey pucks slit on ice for every writing was ease into. Having been accustomed to the kind of grief that one carries in one's own splitting, it's not dangerous like they think. Freud's idea of sublimation twists an ordinary logic. If you like to torture, you like to torture, sir. Becoming a surgeon ongoing's what began. The social scene is night-pierced, where it finds its necessary fissure, rapt attention. Impending, inevitable, the mother at the rim of gazing inside the dug hole, one's own clutching toward before. Pottery because vessels, because a sown language, caring, we think, that that is an injured raccoon. Steams, confused. Where do I go? Historical anatomy, water saturated organs, water outside, not enough now. Mother does not drink enough water. They feed her milk, percussive throat, throb, left side. It's all in your head, they tell me. What I hear is my own short voice. Thank you.
Thank you.
so much. I'm going to ask John Ariana to pull your mics back to our faces. And we have time for just three or four questions, depending on how much we chat. And I think I'll stay here. Since we're live streaming, if you ask a question out there, no one out there can hear you unless I repeat it. So please keep your insightful questions brief so that I can remember them to repeat them. So who has a question? We can also just buy books and drink. Oh, we have a question.
Would they talk about scaling and love, like big love and little love and love a lot and love a little?
Okay, so we have a question about, for either of you to talk about scales of love, loving a lot, loving a little, big love.
I almost don't understand the question. Like, you mean, like, if you love, love is like a kind of like, you know, like sexual orientation. You're like a little gay or 90 gay, like all gay.
Right. Or like you love everyone.
Or do you love everyone? Maybe it's capital L love.
I mean, I think of, you know, I was thinking about this because I was like writing this answers to this interview for, that's on the Nightboat blog now, and thinking about like this possibility of big loving and what that means. I think that big loving for me does not mean necessarily, like I'm not Cornel West, you know, although I do quote Cornel West in this interview. Like I'm not like, you know, love everybody, love your enemies, I'm not a prophetic Christian. That's on me, but like I dig where he's coming from, and I like thinking about it. But because, as Ariana said earlier, I am an Aries, but I also have a Leo rising and a Leo moon, which means it's like all fire. It does make it really difficult for me to be like, I love everyone, even my enemies, even the people I can't stand. How can I be a snobby moron? I think of like loving as a kind of like process towards something. In this political moment, especially, so there's like the love, the intense, like the erotic, like, you know, kind of like heartbreaking love of like loving another individual. There's like the love of, you know, family, which is also heartbreaking and can be devotional, as we were talking about earlier. But if I'm thinking about love being as like a kind of gerund, I think it has a possibility for like moving something forward, giving up something, getting outside of one's own mode in order to liberate something and make something else happen, as opposed to, you know, it's almost like just a kind of like action and practice, even when one does not necessarily, you know, kind of like feel in one's like chest or heart or body that the big love that you're talking about. This is my initial question.
That's beautiful. I like this question because it's one of the irritations of life. It's like the question of, you know, the idea that these things are, the idea that anything is quantifiable or that you have to like portion it out or something. And when I was working on the rose, I thought that I was making a study of the history of the idea of romance. But because I'm me, I wasn't actually being systematic about it, I wasn't actually studying it. I was just kind of like vibing off of the idea of making such a study. Mm-hmm. Because the notion that you could have a big love, it's like it's also like a cultural program that I feel like I grew up with. And something that I remember, I did a reading in Berlin with a Palestinian poet who I love, and he said, and it really gave me a lot of relief when he said this on stage. He said, "Since I was a teenager, I've only wanted to be a love poet, and all I've ever been writing about is war." And it really, like, my heart just, it's like scales fell off my heart when he said that, because I was like, oh, that's why he's such a great poet. And then I was like, probably, I wonder, like, is there a poet that exists that, like, didn't want to be a like, who doesn't want it, you know, like, and I just, and so I've been kind of, like, playing with and, like, slapping around, like, the little girl that wanted to be a love poet in me, you know, and it is irritating, the idea that erotic love seems, like, it carries this charge of, like, to the exclusion of others, it's like, or that, like, Robert Frost line or whatever, it's like, I forget the line now, it's not drink and be whole again, beyond confusion or whatever, but it's the one where he's like, only me, nobody remembers that line, that's okay, it's really hot, but only me, anyway, the answer to your question is, I don't know.
What should be the answer to all? I saw a hand back.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you both so much. I wanted to ask you to talk more about your thinking about the experience of love and the experience of grief and how they relate to each other, how they seem to be the same. But I wanted to ask you about this in the sort of under the umbrella of consequences.
Okay, I'm going to attempt to repeat that.
Okay, great.
We have a question about the themes of love and grief and how they might be intertwined or inform one another and how they might be embodied.
Yeah, and in the
realm
of consequences.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes. And what their consequences might be. So maybe Ariel will go first, and then chat away, and then I think we'll sign some books, and we'll pour a little wine and bubble water. I do want to say one final thing before we hear our last conversation. For those listening at home, a lot of people here, which is great. We have the old air conditioner blasting. It's warm in here, but I'm happy to report that we have filed the paperwork for the work permits to put in heat pump mini split cooling system. So hopefully very, very soon, and maybe the next time you're here, the cooling will be whisper quiet and effective. So we'll report that. Yeah, that's pretty cool. And also, for those who are not on your mailing list, lots more coming up, a lot of free virtual programs, other things in here, hopefully in air-conditioned comfort. Please do sign the mailing list. And now, the answer to that question.
The answer. I'm so grateful to you all for suffering with us. I love
when we taught over at TSL or whatever, and it was like 1,000 degrees.
It was 1,000 degrees, like 5 people had nervous breakdown.
The workshop was like 3 hours long.
Yeah, it was just
10 times worse.
It was a death wish, really. It was all about surviving together.
Yeah.
But why else do we come here, really? We'll talk about this when we're off the air. We'll talk about the service that goes on here in Hudson. But I love that line in your book so much. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to deform that. It's like a consequence of a book. A little book.
We're all little books, little consequences.
We're all little books, little consequences. It's so good. It's just so good. And I just want to quickly, say that my mind got scrambled about the air conditioning. Just go back to your question about grief. So when I was making my quote-unquote systematic study of the history of romance, like from, say, Medea to the Troubadours, I just made this up. I don't know if it's true. I didn't read it in a book. I made this up. I made up this idea that I like, which is that the novel was invented as a consolation to women, and that the immense grief of their confinement is what actually gave birth to the sonnet, and that it's like a fractal emanation from the cosmic yoni that like had to electrify. So theoretically, it started in Italy, you know, and then Wyatt and Surrey caught on to it, and then everyone started. It started to be like, you can't fuck a lady unless you please her first, and you have to learn how to talk to her. And then all of these
poems start saying, lady, my lady, woman, my mistress, my queen. Like, all of a sudden, these men are addressing themselves to the fucking, to the yoni. Like, it's just like suddenly the language is like, we don't know how to talk to her. She's so unhappy. Like, what do we do? And like, that's my theory of civilization. Like, a lot of civilization has been very bad, obviously. But I really like this idea that like suddenly the language itself noticed that like the pussy was like, this is terrible. Like, no, like the cosmic no was pouring out of the yoni in the sky. And the language had to sort of get things turned around to start speaking to her in a way that she wanted to be talked to.
Wow. I'm going to answer this question in an entirely different way. Your logic sounds reasonable. I'll just say briefly that I think that, like, grief can take, you know, inherent in grief is loss, and I think that as a person who practices with my partner loving multiple people at the same time, romantic love, and sexual love and erotic love, that we that there is, it illuminates the part of love, that loving that has to do with grief, that I think in heterosexual monogamous love gets like buried.
So true.
Sorry, very true.
Yeah, like that's almost the name of heterosexuality. It's like bury your grief, be redeemed only by me.
Sorry, very true. Yeah, and I think in terms of like consequences, it's like a learning. Consequence, like if you think about something, a notion like jealousy, which I think, again, like heterosexual monogamous love gets to be like jealousy, and you know, kind of like this notion of cheating, whatever. Like, you just know that fractures everything and obliterates everything. And really, it's a learning. Jealousy is a learning possibility. It's a learning possibility. I think about your own individual loss as opposed to something that has something to do with the other.
Yes. Okay.
Isn't it exciting to study love? We don't study it culturally at all. Like, I want you to give like a year-long syllabus.
We need to keep this conversation happening.
Let us please. Mm-hmm. Thank you all.
Thank you. Not only can you buy a book and have it signed by God, but you will purchase it from the actual publisher.
Ooh,
please join us back. Those listening at home, thanks for joining us. See you soon.
Special pin.
What's up, Dad? Digital that and what?
I know, some kind of converter.
And then you just, you need a little lesson, but it's not hard. This is done now, but you open up this program called Gut, which I